VFR flight following, why you should always ask for it. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot, and of Bob Miller Flight Training at the... Bob, is it Buffalo Lancaster or Lancaster Buffalo Airport?
Buffalo Lancaster is the official name, Paul.
All right. Well, we hope things are going well. I know you've created a very busy life for yourself, and we appreciate your taking a few minutes out for our listeners today.
Well, again, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
In the latest edition of Over the Airwaves, the June issue, you talked about radar flight following, insist on it. And you talk about the benefits of receiving radar services, but at the same time, I remember having it stressed that VFR flight following, at least, was, you know, at the option of the controller and the controller's workload. Are we really in a position to insist on it?
Well, when I said insist on it, this is something that we should, as a matter of practice, invite radar flight following anytime that we can get it. My experience, I don't think I've ever been denied radar flight following or flight following services at any time, nor have I, on very rare occasion, have I heard a pilot refuse to have radar flight following services. I did make mention of the fact that if you do request it and you're turned down, you know, the aircraft radio is no place to engage in a heated discussion with a controller. But I suggest that as an alternative, you simply note the time and frequency, and then when you're back on the ground, give a call to the facility manager and simply ask nicely over the telephone what circumstances precluded the offering of flight following. Most controllers that I have talked with and that I've worked with over the times I've been flying would really like to have aircraft under positive control or at least tagged up with a squawk code so that they can have an idea where everybody's going, as opposed to just having aircraft in their airspace moving in directions that are basically unpredictable.
Well, now, in Buffalo, you have a unique series of meetings that you hold between flight instructors and pilots and the air traffic controller community, those meetings at the Chop House. Does this come up, and what do they say about the reasons for denying flight following, or is that even done at all?
Well, no. On the contrary, at least in our neck of the woods, anytime services are provided by ATC, that's a workload count. And when I mean workload count, staffing patterns in the TRACONs and in the towers are all geared to traffic volume. And when traffic volume goes down, counts go down, jobs are lost, facilities go from 24-hour facilities to part-time facilities. All the controllers that we work with and talk with, you know, say, you know, give us a call. Just to ask us what time it is. We're here, and each time we do that, of course, it's a click on the workload measurement devices. But more often, I think most controllers, certainly 99% of the controllers that I've ever been involved with, they recognize their role as the protectors of the safety of the skies, and they very much want to help out and to help keep traffic separated. One of the things that precipitated that article was a collision between two GA aircraft someplace out over Ohio, and a paradox of that is one of the pilots had requested VFR flight following and was denied allegedly due to workload. Well, shortly after the refusal of that request, the two aircraft were engaged in a mid-air collision, all died as a result. Now, again, as I say this, we as VFR pilots, or as any pilot, we cannot, our primary responsibility is to look out the window. The requirement for collision avoidance lies squarely on the shoulders of the PIC, the pilot in command. But ATC has a unique advantage. They can see in all directions. We can't necessarily see in all directions. And I'm hard-pressed to imagine a controller looking at his scope and seeing two airplanes on a collision course and not take the time to provide traffic advisory so as to prevent a possible collision.
All right. Now, obviously, if you're going to have VFR flight following, you're going to have a transponder. This is going to be something unavailable to people who fly older planes that have no electrical systems or for whatever reason are not equipped with a transponder.
Well, yes, and that goes to the freedom that we aviators enjoy, and those are precious freedoms that we have to equip our airplanes pretty much any way we want to have them. But to my major gripe is individuals who have transponders, but that don't turn them on or don't turn them on to altitude encoding so that the controller can't get a positive sense of where they are. In other words, if you have a transponder, let's use it. And if you're flying an older aircraft, the skies are getting crowded. And for the small expense that it really represents, turn that transponder on and take the advisories. Fortunately, mid-air collisions don't happen very often, but they do happen enough to gather our attention. And believe me, if you've ever been a product of a near miss in an airplane, and I have on several occasions, it's enough to kind of sober us all up with the importance of having all eyes on the sky, and particularly involvement from ATC to watch what we're doing.
You know, I know there are still some pilots out there who feel that they don't want to turn on a transponder because it creates an audit trail of where they've flown, for lack of better words. The benefits of having flight following, or even just squawking 1200 and not having flight following, would seem to me to far outweigh any conspiracy theory concerns.
Well, yeah, the conspiracy theory, I suppose, is out there to some small extent. But again, all you have to do is be, as I said, survive a near-miss experience, and that'll make a believer out of anybody. I really just encourage all of us to go out there when we're working in the traffic pattern, when we're working in a practice area, wherever we're traveling. Look at ATC as the second member of the cockpit crew or the third member of the cockpit crew. They're there to help, and believe me, their actions can save a life.
We're talking with Bob Miller, who is the publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. We'll be back to talk in a moment about how to maximize the new glass navigation tools. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the suit, you gotta have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We're talking about the flying environment. We talked a little bit about VFR flight following. Bob, I wanted to follow up and mention something that you talked about in your latest edition of Over the Airwaves. And that is maximizing the benefits of glass panel navigation tools. You commented that Bill Gates had talked about the pace at which technology is making business more efficient, and you kind of made a parallel to how the new glass navigation tools are potentially making us more efficient as pilots and safer. What do we have to do to be ready to get all the benefits that these things offer?
Money. Money, unfortunately, is the great divider between them that have and them that do not have. And I say that without apology. I am one that's flying a 25-year-old aircraft that I own, a 1980 Cessna 210. I routinely fly in the New York metropolitan area with our training aircraft that are all G1000 equipped that have traffic collision avoidance systems. They have terrain avoidance on big screens. And it is such a joy to fly in that crowded airspace, knowing that in addition to ATC call-outs and looking out the window, I'm also displaying all of the traffic, on a large screen. Just last week, I took my family down to New York City in my own 210, and that's an older round dial style without traffic collision avoidance. And I want to tell you, going down that same VFR corridor down the Hudson River without that, I felt like walking across Fifth Avenue blindfolded. You really sense the loss of vital information when you don't have that technology. It's there, and I'm thinking of parallels. The parents that refuse to immunize their children for fear that there's some ulterior motive in doing that. Immunizations is a result of medical technological advances that help to eliminate or prevent disease. And the glass panel technology, the traffic collision technology, is roughly akin to medical advances where we have those immunizations. That technology can immunize us quite literally against an untoward outcome in an airplane. And I'm speaking specifically of controlled flight into terrain and mid-air collisions.
I'm going to go back to my question and try to re-aim it a little bit, Bob, because it occurs to me that the Corey Lytle incident in that very VFR corridor, if nothing else, proved that just the presence in the aircraft of modern glass panel tools does not preclude controlled flight into terrain.
Well, you're absolutely right, and something we have to remember to do is to turn the stuff on. I mean, in that airplane, the Cirrus SR-20, SR-22 with the Integra Avidyne system, or the G-1000, when we turn the screens on, terrain avoidance does not come on automatically. Traffic information systems do not come on automatically. Weather does not come on automatically. We have to push the buttons to get the information out of that system that we want. In the Corey Lytle situation, it's hard to imagine how that accident could have even remotely occurred had they had terrain avoidance on, because the buildings on the left and the buildings on the right side of the river would have been painted in bright red along either border of the multifunction display. It would be foolhardy to make a turn left or right into that red that's being displayed. I'm thinking perhaps it wasn't even turned on.
Well, I guess to put it in general terms then for our listeners, if you have this equipment, don't wait until you're in a high workload environment to try these features. Go someplace where you can practice and learn to use them like the back of your hand before you get into a tough situation.
Well, you're referring specifically to training. I took a trip about 6 months ago, a year ago, to New York with a pilot from the Midwest in his SR-22 into the New York area. And believe me, the lack of knowledge or awareness that this individual exhibited in his own aircraft systems was disarming. Sometimes we have the equipment, like our video recorders at home, where we're not capable of programming them. That's one thing when we're talking about home TV sets, but if we have an airplane that's technologically advanced, we have a genuine responsibility to learn how that equipment works. And just one last point, unfortunately, many of the flight instructors that we receive our recurrent training from are not, and believe me, I was numbered among them, not skilled in some of the technological advancements in the newer cockpits. We have to become skilled if we're going to teach on them, and if we're not skilled on them, then we have to refer that customer to somebody else, because just the nature of the systems requires us to be proficient.
Well, Bob, I can think of a few flight instructors I have been in contact with, not in a student pilot or student instructor relationship, with just friends hanging out in the hangar, and have noticed that there are some flight instructors who don't easily admit that there are things they need to refer off to someone more qualified.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, not to one-up you, but there are designated pilot examiners who are even in worse situation. I have an examiner I've been using for years on conventional aircraft, and I asked him, I said, I'm going to start sending my G-1000 graduates to him for check rides. And he says, I have no G-1000 experience. And I said, well, Well, pardon me, how are you going to check them out? Even partial panel, how are you going to check their skills out if you don't know how the systems work? And he said, good question. And yet they're doing check rides in aircraft that they themselves are not proficient in. And that we really can't blame the DPEs for that. It's impossible, mm-hmm. I think, for all of them to keep up to date on all of the remarkable advances that are taking place in the cockpits. It just makes it all more urgent that we spend more time getting recurrent training, particularly in these TAA, technically advanced aircraft, if we're gonna use them to best advantage.
Well, and there are so many different flavors of even the major systems when you move from brand to brand in aircraft that it would be a daunting task to have to learn them all at the level of proficiency you'd need to be an effective designated examiner.
I think that's one of the greatest challenges that flight instructors have and DPEs have as well, is the avionics, is the technology that's emerging in these aircraft.
Well, Bob, as always, we consider this time well spent. We appreciate your time, and I'll talk to you again on the 23rd.
Thanks a lot, Paul Stephen.
My guest has been Bob Miller. You can find Bob's writings at overtheairwaves.com. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.